This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
On the Jordan Harbinger Show, you'll hear amazing stories from people that have lived them, from spies to CEOs, even an undercover agent who infiltrated the Gambino crime family. You're about to hear a preview of the Jordan Harbinger Show with Jack Garcia, who did just that.
My career was 24 out of 26 years was solely dedicated working undercover. Now I walk in, I'm in the bar. Now there's a barmaid there, good looking young lady. She's serving me a drink. Hey, what would you like? I usually, my drink was give me a Kettle One martini, three olives, glass of water on the side. I finish the drink, the guys come in, I'm going to go in my pocket, take out the big wad of money. Bam, I give her $100. If you're with the mob, I say, hey, Jordan, you're on record with us. That means we protect you. Nobody could shake you down. We could shake you down, but you're on record with us.
For more on how Jack became so trusted in the highest levels of the Gambino organization, check out episode 392 of The Jordan Harbinger Show.
This is The Jesse Kelly Show.
Nobody panic. It is my voice for real. It is me, Sombrero Jesse, in the house for what's going to be an awesome show on a Wednesday. There was not a show yesterday. There was a health issue at the house. It was not my health issue. Don't panic. No, everything's fine. But there was an issue. So you can stop screaming at Jewish producer Chris to get the podcast up. There was no podcast. 877-377-4373. Jesse@jessekellyshow.com. We have Brandon Darby next hour, our resident border expert. Do you think he might have a thing or two to say? And for you Tuesday BK-loving freaks, BK is still going to be here third hour. We just postponed him a day. We have $4 a gallon gas, a Senate filibuster. Everything's a disaster except for Florida. But first, as we are known to do from time to time on the show, we need to go backwards a little bit. It occurred to me, I would guess 3 years, I think I've been doing radio almost 3 years, that I've done 20 World War II stories, I bet. Probably that many World War I stories, too. This is so vast. One show I watched, I forget where I saw, it's called The Price of Empire, if you're looking for a good World War II documentary that kind of gives different perspectives than the other ones. A lot of the other ones can get perspective, or it could get repetitive. But Price of Empire, they called it World War II, the greatest of all historical events, period. Not wars or anything else. There's never been anything like it. It's so fast. But of all the ones I've ever done, I've never done Peleliu, which is amazing to me. Because it may have been the most terrible of all the battles in the Pacific. I can't say that it was, but it might have been. It just simply sounds like hell. It sounds like hell. Let's go into it. It is the year 1944. I do not expect you to be some gigantic history nerd with a brain that's a steel trap for facts and know what order the island hopping campaign came in. And let's pause for a moment on the island hopping campaign. A little rewind, because I realize we have a bunch of new listeners and a bunch of new affiliates, and these numbers are ridiculous. Not that I blame any of you for tuning in to the sultry sounds of my voice, Chris. But anyway, World War II. There's a lead up to World War II. It did not begin in Pearl Harbor. Japan was a backwards country. I'm not going to recap all that because they are an extremely impressive people, although you may end up with a negative view of them at the end of the story today. They're an extremely impressive people who I love. You know I love their culture. Woke up one day and decided we're not going to be backwards anymore. We're going to get advanced fast. And they just did it. Just put their minds to it and advanced fast. It's amazing. Became a modern nation, modern military, modern economy, and started looking around, decided they wanted to spread their wings a little bit, limited by Japan's natural resources. And oh, did they spread their wings. Mainly in China, beating the crap out of the Chinese, being very aggressive, trying to take Chinese natural resources. America steps in and says, stop doing that. We like China. We like the Chinese. Quit doing that. Japan says, go screw yourself. You can't tell us what to do. America says, fine. All that oil and steel we send you to support your economy, we're taking it away. Japan says, oh, it's on then. And Japan's plan was this. We only focus on the Pearl Harbor part of it because that's obviously the part that applies to us as Americans. But Pearl Harbor was one of many in the span of about 24, 48 hours, gigantic Japanese highly coordinated attacks on various areas around the Pacific Ocean. And all you need to do, don't worry about the thousands of little islands and such, all you need to do is know this. Picture Japan. I know you have an image of it in your mind. Draw a gigantic, and I mean thousands of miles, gigantic circle around it. China and really the islands in the Pacific. The plan for Japan was punch America in the nose, then immediately seize and fortify all kinds of islands. Not all the islands, remember, there are thousands of them, but seize all kinds of islands, turn the Pacific into a fortress. Our Japanese warrior spirit, none of our guys give up, will make taking back these islands too much for the soft, feminine Americans. That was their thinking at the time. They were very sure we were soft and feminine. We were very sure they were tiny little barbarians. Again, racism is the history of the world, and it's just the way it goes. That was what happened after Pearl Harbor. And so, as you know, we start the famous Pacific Island Hopping Campaign. There's the Battle of Midway and whatnot. We are now in 1944. We are after the Battle of Saipan, but this is before the huge battles of Iwo Jima and Okinawa. And you don't, again, I'm not trying to drown you in details. Just know this isn't the very beginning of the Pacific battles. It's not the very end of the Pacific battles. It was sadly, though, America's first introduction to a new Japanese strategy. A somehow more horrible than all the others' Japanese strategy. And this is what armies do and nations do as war progresses. You are the United States Marine Corps and elements of the United States Army, and you are learning how to do amphibious landings. And what that, obviously, you know what that is. You're coming in off the ocean, you're landing on the land, And that is extremely dangerous and difficult, much more difficult than going from land to land because there's nowhere to turn around and run back to. Your boats are vulnerable in the water. Oceans have vastly different depths. You can get ships stuck. It's just very dangerous, very difficult. But as you go, you're learning how to do it better. You're learning how the Japanese defend themselves in these islands. So you're advancing, and you always like to just focus on you. But here's the thing. America wasn't soft and feminine. But the Japanese weren't stupid little barbarians either. They're learning too. As your tactics change, as you learn what they do, they're learning what you do. And they're making adjustments. And America was about to be introduced to the new Japanese national strategy and new Japanese adjustment. What was the Japanese strategy early? Let's meet them on the beach. Let's mow them down. This is for God and country. These weak, sissified Americans won't be able to stand up to our bonsai charge where we pull out bayonets and samurai swords. And boy, was that a humongous, nationally embarrassing failure. The Americans were anything but soft and feminine, and your idiotic bonsai charge with a samurai sword may look really, really cool. They were the most ineffective waste of human life ever. Americans in general, let alone United States Marines, can shoot. Marines simply mowed these guys down in such big piles during these bonsai charges. One of the biggest complaints was pushing over the pile of bodies so you could have some kind of field of view. The bonsai charge was idiotic. Yes, I'm a man of traditions. I think culture and traditions matter. Let's be honest. Some of theirs, some of ours, some of yours are dumb. A bonsai charge is stupid. It just is. So the Japanese decided here at Peleliu, let's set that aside and create hell. You want to know what hell sounds like? I'm about to tell you. Brandon Darby on the border next hour.
Jesse Kelly on air and online at jessekellyshow.com.
I hate you need to be healthier. I hate when people say that to me. I despise it. Because I don't like giving people problems without giving people solutions. Do better. That's not a solution. So when I tell you, take care of your heart, take care of your blood pressure, I'm also bringing a solution with it. That solution is Superbeats Heart Chews. I mean, you know the other basic stuff. Sadly, we cannot eat double cheeseburgers every meal. We have to move and exercise now and then. But look, beyond the normal stuff, Superbeats Heart Chews are outstanding for you. You want to try to avoid that pill bottle later on in life as I do? Well, I have to be proactive. So I take Superbeats. Go to getsuperbeats.com/Jesse. That's getsuperbeats.com/Jesse. Buy two bags, get the third free.
Jesse Kelly. Back soon.
But Ron, no, he's not scared of those people. He's scared of this fictitious idea of Antifa, a thing that doesn't even exist. He needs to go. He needs to go, and soon.
A thing that doesn't even exist. The communists are one of a kind, aren't they? What have we talked about 1,000 times? They will tell you a lie. And then lie about the lie. And then lie about lying about the lie. And then they'll insist that you not only shut up pointing out the lie, they will demand approval. Of the lie. They will demand you back up the lie, that you repeat the lie. That's what communists do. We'll get to that here in a little bit. All right. Chris, you know southern border crossings are at a 20-year high. 20-year high? Yeah, I know. What a shock. What a shock with the ride. All right, back to Peleliu. We'll get to that in a few. 877-377-4373, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. If you look at pictures of Peleliu, which you can do right now, P-E-L-E-L-I-U. Don't do it if you're driving, but if you're in a place where you can look it up right now, I love to look at maps and pictures when I'm talking about places. It gives you a better feel for the story. However, I realize a lot of you can't. Here's what Peleliu is. It's only 6 miles by 2 miles. It's just a dumpy little island. And when I say dumpy, it sucks. It's volcanic rock. They said it looked like a volcano sprouted out of the middle of the ocean. And it's all one gigantic piece of coral, so it's hard rock. And the hard rock somehow has all kinds of jungle still growing out of it. So you get the worst of every world. You have hard volcanic rock with the thick jungle that prevents you from being able to see. But wait, there's more. The new Japanese strategy was, well, we can shoot at them a little on the beaches, but we're not doing bonsai charges anymore. We're not in a place where we think we're going to be able to win the war anymore. Clearly, the tide had turned by now. However, we can make this war so horrible and bloody and terrible for the Americans that they will negotiate a better peace that looks like a win for us in the end, Japanese honor and all that. So they took that gigantic slab of rock, which is perfect for this anyway, and they used natural caves, extended the caves, extended the tunnels. The best way I heard it described, and I wish I could remember where I saw this one time, but I'm sorry I forgot. They did a picture, like a computer 3D picture of one of these gigantic pieces of rock, one of these like rock mountains in there. And they showed you red throughout all of it, which were supposed to represent all the tunnels and caves. And they said it's essentially a fortress beehive of hell. Oh, but wait, there's more. 10,000 Japanese troops were put on Peleliu. Peleliu, what it was for the overall strategy was, it was MacArthur talking FDR into going after the Philippines and then convincing everyone else we had to take Peleliu before we could move on to other things, because Peleliu was, you know, walking your way towards the Philippines. Turns out in the end, as heartbreaking as this is, by the way, it didn't even turn out to be necessary. The stuff we're about to talk about didn't even turn out to be necessary. Back to the troops. 10,000 Japanese troops were there. Oh, they were also the best Japanese troops in the entire Japanese army. Their saltiest, most experienced unit, who'd been killing Chinese people for a decade, Japan was so desperate to stall the Americans right there, to make Peleliu a living hell, they took 10,000 of their crack troops, fortified this island with concrete bunkers, like I said, tunnels, caves, everything else, put their elite of the elite in it, and stocked them full of supplies. And they did it months and months and months and months before the Americans showed up. Do you have any idea how difficult it is to root out a highly trained, well-prepared enemy that has months to figure out how to get you? As a brief example, let me just say this, and I'm jumping ahead just a little bit, but at one point, one of the Marine platoons found an anti-tank ditch they could dive into for cover from the fire they were receiving from the Japanese. It was all a trap. You know how a ditch runs one line? The Japanese had set up a secret machine gun bunker running the length of the ditch that they saved. They didn't shot it until all the Marines jumped into the ditch and killed the entire platoon. That's the stuff you get with preparation, with time. That's how you create a living hell. The Marines land. They do the famous combined arms thing. And whenever you hear somebody talk about combined arms, just know this. It's a bunch of different kinds of attack. The Marine combined arms in general, when it comes to amphibious landings, goes something like this. The naval guns, the gigantic naval guns, will pound someplace into smithereens. Then the planes will start strafing. Then the troops are landing, generally coordinated with the planes. It's to keep everyone's head down, soften up the enemy, maybe destroy the enemy, while your guys land on the beach. And landing on a beach, as I talked about briefly before, is a very, very, very dangerous thing to do. Because you can picture a beach. There's very rarely something good to hide behind. You can't go backwards because that's the ocean. You have to go forward. But a prepared enemy, as we already discussed, we have, knows you have to go forward. And they have surprises waiting for you right off the beach. However, you don't have the option of stopping either because there's only so much room on a beach. Other guys are already on the move and landing on the beach. You must get there and you must go. What kind of casualties were they taking early on? Oh, I don't know. A 50-man unit ended up with 9 at the end of day one. It's horrible. The Japanese, again, with time to prepare, had sighted in their artillery on the beaches. And all that naval gunfire, that fancy shooting from the planes and everything else, it doesn't do any good against a concrete coral beehive of a fortress. They simply just stayed inside until they were done shooting and then popped out and started killing the Americans. And again, remember, there are trees everywhere too. Not only are you, the Japanese, in a mountain fortress beehive cave, you have trees in front of you and they can't see you. They don't know where you are. And you know this island like the back of your hand. It is, the casualty numbers they're beyond belief. They're absolutely beyond belief. One unit of 400 men, they land, they're fighting, they're getting slaughtered. By the end of the day, this 400-man unit had 30 Marines left standing. 30 Marines left standing. And this is how combat goes. These 30 Marines who are left standing, they're left standing on top of this hill they had to take from the Japanese. That's part of the reason the casualty numbers were so high. But the Japanese aren't idiots. And the Japanese are very, very, very good. And what's their plan? Oh, they're going to counterattack and take it back from 30 dudes. And how are things on that mountain? What's going on in combat like this? I'll tell you.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, don't tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
877-377-4373. Jesse at jessekellyshow.com. Remember, email your love, your hate, your death threats. Your Ask Dr. Jesse questions Friday is just around the corner. Just around the corner. You can find me on social media at JesseKellyDC on Twitter, Instagram. I'm on Facebook, and I'm on Locals. That's the place I can't get kicked off of. Back to Peleliu before we get to the border being overrun and $4 a gallon gas. $4! Chris, I have a 32-gallon tank on my truck. I don't know. I'm going to start biking to work or something like that. $4 a gallon. How many miles to the gallon do I get? Chris, I don't track each and everything in my life for maximum savings, unlike you. Okay, I don't know. I'm guessing 16, 17 miles a gallon. It's a pickup truck, Chris. It's not a Kia. What do you want me to do? All right. I'm not going to yell at Chris anymore right now. So, the situation is so bad on the island that Marine units, as you just heard, 400 to 30, they get to a point, like this Marine unit, 400 men, now down to 30 men, and you've taken a hilltop. But understand what that's like when you're taking casualties like this. And this really hit me when they used to train us in the Marine Corps about attacking things and going or doing these war game simulations. It is amazing how much you are slowed down and sometimes stopped by wounded and dead people. And how they would prepare you for this is they would take a platoon movement, 30 guys. You're moved from here to there and attack these people. Only they'll have people overwatching the exercise. And they'll randomly say, everyone stop, and everyone will just stop real quick. And they'll come over and they'll say, all right, you, and you, lay down. You're all wounded. You see, it's not like in the movies. I have to advance. I have to take this objective. My buddy just got shot in the stomach right beside me. He's calling out, Jesse, help. I have to stop and try to patch him up, try to get the doc over here to help, but I'm still getting shot out. I have to run that way. Oh, but he had a critical piece of gear. I have to take his gear off his body. Oh, man, there's my buddy Bill. Bill just got shot in the face. He's gone. Is he gone? We have to make sure he's gone. We can't just leave him there. All right, shoot, Bill's dead. I have to go. You see what I mean? You're advancing, and you're taking such losses that you're getting slowed down the more you advance. And then by the time you're 30 guys left on top of an objective that you took, you're shot to pieces. None of those 30 guys are whole by that point in time, mentally or physically. And the Japanese are whole, and they're coming back. Should be noted the Japanese did counterattack that night, and those 30 Marines did hold that hill, which is extremely impressive. And the Japanese, they, as we've discussed before, we just talk about them in World War II, they just had a knack for horror. They were trying to break America mentally, had tried to break everybody mentally. They believed in it, and it's a very Asian way, a very Eastern way to view warfare, and it's hard to argue with how effective it is. I'm sorry if it sounds like I'm impressed by it. I'm horrified by it. I'm amazed our guys were strong enough to get through it, but it is effective. They would, at nighttime, they would sneak guys. They were great at night, great in the jungle. They would, knowing they were going to die, sneak a dude or two up to the front lines of the Marines and just drop in a fighting hole and start stabbing people with bayonets and samurai swords. And there are multiple stories about somebody falling asleep. You know, you're exhausted. Sometimes you can't keep your eyes open and waking up with a Japanese bayonet in your stomach. And there's a story. It was horrible. I saw so many very cool things in this. I got some old footage of Peleliu, and there was a guy talking about how in the fighting hole next to him, we're talking 20 yards away, maybe. I don't have the exact distance, but it depends on how many men you have left. 15, 20 yards away. Fighting hole next to him, two Marines had fallen asleep. Japanese happened to drop in that hole instead of his hole, and he woke up listening to his buddies dying in there. the Japanese would let units patrol. They, instead of getting antsy, they would stay disciplined. They'd let the entire unit pass by, and then one guy, because it was one dude, would pop up and walk up behind the last guy in the formation and cut his throat, and then walk up to the next guy and cut his throat and get as many as he could until the Americans could see what was happening and turn around and shoot him dead. These things destroy you psychologically. And I haven't even gotten to the tunnels and caves. A tunnel or cave, while I find them very cool, and I'm sure you may too, is a naturally scary place. That's part of the reason I find them cool. You don't know what's in there. I could take you up to Montana and find a mountain cave, and you would have your heart rate going a little bit if we were walking into that cave, and so would I. I don't know what's in there. Probably nothing. Who knows? Now, what if you knew? What if you knew for a fact there was a bunch of highly trained, deadly people in this dark cave that might even be a tunnel? Forget about cave. It may go through. And at best, they're going to murder you. At worst, well, it was not uncommon for Americans to find other Americans who'd been tortured to death routinely, using them for bayonet practice and doing worse things than that that I do not think are appropriate for me to say on a show that I told you you can always listen to with your kids. I mean, ugly things. And that person, those people, they're in that cave, and you have to go get them. I saw a video. It was one of the toughest things I've seen. They still have so much World War II footage, believe it or not, that they haven't gone through yet or just got filed away. But I saw someone had made a documentary off a bunch of footage from Peleliu. They had a bunch of Marine photographers there that were taking video. And they were showing the photographers the video for the first time. They'd never seen the own video they'd taken. And there was a video of a guy on a hospital ship right outside of Peleliu. And he was a Marine. He had all his, you know, fingers and toes and such. But he was simply a mentally broken human being. He was stumbling around as if he was drunk, pointing to the sky, waving around like a crazy person. They're trying to grab him and calm him down, and he's just freaking out. He has lost his mind. This kind of environment broke people's minds. The famous Marine E.B. Sledge, who wrote that book, With the Old Breed, it's what that show, The Pacific, on HBO, which I highly recommend, they based a lot of it on E.B. Sledge. He said his one goal getting off there, whether he died, whatever, was to not go insane like so many of his friends were going insane. Men were simply breaking mentally. They couldn't do it. There's horrible pictures and video of Marines, I mean, Pacific Island fighting Marines, just resting their head on a buddy's shoulder and sobbing. Just sobbing. One of the most famous pictures from Peleliu is a Marine sitting there with his head, his face in his hands. And I'm sure if you look up Peleliu Marine, it's probably the first thing that comes up. I haven't done it. But the story behind that was he had just been in close combat with a Japanese guy. The Japanese guy tried to stab him with the bayonet. Marine, pop, kills the Japanese guy, sees something sticking out of his shirt, grabs whatever's in his shirt and looks at it, and it's a picture of that Japanese guy with his family. These men are incredible human beings. We're going to wrap up the story, and then we'll get to the rest of, well, $4 a gallon gas. Hang on.
Is he smarter than everyone?
Who knows?
Does he think so? Yeah. The Jesse Kelly Show.
I never wanted to quit dipping tobacco, to be totally honest. I never wanted to quit. I know some people get that way. Maybe you're that way, and that's a good thing. Maybe you woke up today and thought, ugh, I never want another dip again. Well, I'll tell you, I haven't dipped in a while, but I'd take a dip right now. I loved it. So when you're someone who loves it like I loved it, you need help. You need a transition to get you off of it. Jake's Mint Chew is the best transition because it's all natural. There's no tobacco. There's no nicotine. So you're not replacing one bad for you vice with another kind of bad for you vice. It's healthy. Go, and I highly recommend you try out the CBD pouches. Go to jakesmintchew.com. That's jakesmintchew.com. Use the promo code Jesse. That gets you 20% off.
Congressman Katko was among the House Republicans who toured the border on Monday. At the time, he warned of terrorists starting to exploit the southern border. One day later, U.S. Customs and Border Protection confirmed to Congress that since October, four people have been arrested at the southern border with names matching those on the FBI's terror watch list. Three were from Yemen and one from Serbia.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Don't worry. I'm sure they caught all the terrorists who were coming over. Wink, wink, nod, nod. They definitely catch 100% of them. Gosh. I need to finish a history story. I'm not going to go off on this yet. I'll just say this. And I'm going to talk about this in a little while. The real life consequences of having an unsecured border, you don't really feel them until you really, really feel them. Some guy walks into a children's museum with a bomb strapped to his chest, and he came over with this border surge. You're going to wish you had that border secured then. All right, back to Peleliu, 877-377-4373, Jesse at jessekellyshow.com. Remember, we have BK, former Air Force PJ, BK, coming up in the third hour today, since I was gone yesterday. So the Americans, they're having to fight their way through caves and tunnels. You know about the terror of it. The Japanese are quickly figuring out there's no reinforcements coming. We're all going to die here, and we're going to take as many of these Marines with us as we possibly can. That's their way of thinking. It's a different way of thinking. And the Americans do have some big advantages, though. Make sure you always guard your economy, because the American economy played a big part in us winning World War II. What were our advantages? Well, one of them, the Japanese had tanks there. Oh, no, we're all going to die, Japanese tanks. Except American tanks were there, too. They were twice the size of the Japanese tanks. The Japanese gun, the gun on the Japanese tanks, could not penetrate the armor on the American tanks. The American tanks, one shot, one kill, Japanese tanks. We wiped out their Japanese tanks almost immediately. Mowed right through them. Two, well, the Americans had figured out these Japanese are going to dig in caves and tunnels and such. We need to get our research guys back home to start maybe finding a way to soup up the flamethrower even more. Peleliu was the debut of the American armored flamethrower. I'm sure you've seen video or pictures of it. Essentially, a tank with a gigantic flamethrower on it that shoots over 100 yards, the length of the football field. How do you get people out of that cave? Well, you stop sending Marines inside of it, you aim that bad boy down it, and you start cooking them alive. And they did. And we're talking about an area of cliffs, ridges, trees, and had to be taken inch by inch by inch by inch. The Marine Division commander, a man by the name of Rupertus, shame on him, had famously told everybody that it would be tough, but his Marines would take Peleliu in 3 days. Then when the Marines were getting shot to pieces, Rupertus was constantly being told, you need to ask for reinforcements from the army. He wouldn't do it. Finally, he was forced to accept reinforcements. 50 days later, they were still on Peleliu. Japanese were finally down to 1,000 men from their original 10,000. Their commander asked permission to do a bonsai charge, even though that wasn't allowed anymore. He said, hey, I'm out of ammunition. I can't shoot anymore. Let my men charge and have the honor of dying that way. It was denied. So the Japanese were dying of starvation and dying of thirst in the tunnels and couldn't charge. Finally, they're down to about 300. Then the commander himself, the Japanese commander, commits ritual suicide, as was their custom. 10,000 Japanese on that island when the Americans landed. 34 made it out alive. 28,000 Americans landed. 10,000 casualties at Peleliu. 10,000. Bad experiences early on in the war led the Americans to make advancements, to think, to be mobile, to be humble enough to be pliable. Let's learn our lesson, this field and this field and this field. But then bad experiences oftentimes lead to learning. Learning leads to good experiences. I've learned lessons. I'm good at this. I'm good at that. Good experiences lead to pride. Pride leads right back to the bad experiences. The Americans at Peleliu, they'd had enough success from their early struggles. We don't need the army. We don't need this. We don't need that. We don't need this. That's how you get your men shot to bits. You and I have to be mobile and humble, or we're going to lose our own battle here. I'll explain what I mean in a second. We'll get to the border and the gas and the Senate filibuster and some emails. Hang on. Your holster is way more important than you think it is. It's just way more important than you think it is. What? Look, and I get that. The holster's not the sexy part of carrying firearms, right? You want to talk about your weapon and your ammunition. You want to talk about your safety training. You want to talk about how you did at the range. Oh, look at my groups. I was doing these farrier drills today. And all that stuff's really important. I mean, really, really important. I'm not discounting that. But I've known so many people who do all those things. They take all the necessary steps, and then they carry with a holster they bought from a big box hunting store that was made 1,000 at a time. Please, don't put your life in one of those holsters. You need to trust Northwest Retention Systems because it's all custom-made gear. It's the only thing I carry around. NWRetention.com. That's NWRetention.com. Use the promo code Jesse. Gets you 10% off.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.